Continuing our walk through the book of Ezekiel, we'll, of course, still be keeping one eye on Revelation while we're going through Ezekiel, and also another eye, which I guess means we have three eyes, on other parts of the Old Testament, if we get to, especially if we get to chapter 6 today. But we'll see. We're going to start in Ezekiel chapter 4, and we're going to read through it, all right? And we've also got this list, all right? This list of at least theoretically parallel passages. Or I guess I should say, they are definitely parallel. Part of the question, one of the questions you have to ask when anybody gives you parallel passages, are they meaningfully parallel? Do you have one of these? Okay, well, you get another one. Anybody else need one? This is just blank paper right here, as it turns out. So I'm not going to pass any of that out. So, in learning a foreign language, and you might, can somebody define a cognate for me?
It's like a word that means the same thing in a language, or at least they have very similar meanings.
That's right. So, two words in different languages basically sharing the same meaning, or at least a close meaning. You find this a lot when you have one language descended from another. In the same context, do you know what the word or the term false friend means? In that context. You ever heard that before?
They sound like the same word, but they actually
don't. That's right. You'd think, oh, this is a cognate, but they're actually not at all. And so you're just completely wrong, even though you think, oh, well, I'm reading this Latin word, and it looks like this English word, so it must mean the same thing. False friend is, no, they actually, it's all a lie. They're actually not remotely correlated. Also with this list, we want to see, are there any false friends? Now, so far, I think we've seen, in terms of our list, I'm convinced. I'm completely convinced. The throne room vision, the eating of the book, Ezekiel as the watchman, is very parallel to John in Revelation. There's way too much there for me to go, eh, this is a false friend. And also the end of the book, which we'll go over again in more detail later, the end of the book, there's just far too much correlation there for me to go, well, this is just nothing. It's just a coincidence. But through all of these, we should think about that. Because some of the correlations that this list has are not quite as clear today. And so you should always be thinking when somebody pulls up a parallel, or when you think of a parallel, is this a real parallel or is it a false friend? So let's begin by reading some in Ezekiel. I'll read some, and then let's share the load. We'll go around this way. And if you wish to read some, you can. So Ezekiel chapter 4. And you, son of man, take a brick and lay it before you, and engrave on it a city, even Jerusalem, and put siege works against it, and build a siege wall against it, and cast up a mound against it, set camps also against it, and plant battering rams against it all around. And you take an iron griddle, and place it as an iron wall between you and the city, and set your face toward it, and let it be in a state of siege, and press the siege against it. This is a sign for the house of Israel.
Lie also on your left side, and lay the iniquity of the house of Israel upon it. According to the number of the days that you lie on it, you shall bear their iniquity. For I have laid on you the years of their iniquity, according to the number of the days, 390 days. So you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Israel. And when you have completed them, lie again on your right side. Then you shall bear the iniquity of the house of Judah 40 days. I have laid on you a day for each year. Therefore you shall set your face toward the siege of Jerusalem. Your arm shall be uncovered, and you shall prophesy against it. And surely I will restrain you so that you cannot turn from one side to another till you have ended the days of your siege.
And you take wheat and barley, beans and lentils, millet and emnar, and put them into a single vessel, and make your bread from them. During the number of days that you lie on your side, 390 days, you shall eat it. And your food that you eat shall be by weight 20 shekels a day from day to day. You shall from day to day you shall eat it. And water you shall drink by measure the sixth part of a hin from date in their sight on human dung. And Jehovah said, thus shall the people of Israel eat their bread unclean among the nations where I will drive them. Then I said, ah, Jehovah God, behold, I have never defiled myself. From my youth up till now I have never eaten what died of itself or is torn by beasts, nor has tainted meat come into my mouth.
Then he said to me, see, I assign to you the cow's dung instead of the human dung, on which you may prepare your bread. Moreover, he said to me, son of man, behold, I will break the supply of the bread in Israel. They shall eat bread by weight and with anxiety, and they shall drink water by measure and in dismay. I will do this that they may lack bread and water, and look at one another in dismay, and not away because of their punishment.
All right, pause for a second.
And rot away.
So, what year was Jerusalem destroyed by the Babylonians? 587. And so this is before or after that? Before, right? Because he's prophesying the destruction. Now, he came in a previous conquest, because 587 was not the first time Babylon came and whooped up on Jerusalem. He came in a previous conquest, well, as did Daniel. But he came in a previous conquest 10 years before the destruction of Jerusalem. So this is before that, right? And you see the idea. He's basically creating an image for everybody, and he's going to be doing it for a very, very long time, where he sets up a little city of Jerusalem and says, this is a symbol of what's going to happen. All right? It's fairly clear, I think, what this passage means. What does it mean to say, like in verse 16, they shall eat bread by weight and with anxiety, and they shall drink water by measure and in dismay? What does that mean? What's that?
Rationing.
Right. It sounds like rationing, right? You're under siege. Armies all around you. You run out of food. That's one of the ways you conquer a city. You starve them out, right? Or thirst them out, right? You basically cut off all their supplies, and eventually they just have to give up or they're going to die. That's the basic idea here. It's rationing. It's basic ancient warfare. Because walls, if you got big walls, they're hard to conquer. So instead of conquering them, just camp outside and just let everybody die until they give up. So that's the idea here. Let's keep going. Now, before we go, actually, notice there's no parallel, according to this list, between Ezekiel and Revelation. So in terms of the language, or you might say in terms of theme, if the preterists are right, then there's a whole lot of correspondence between the two. But this list, also by preterists, didn't list it. All right, so let's keep going. Go ahead, Grady.
And thou, son of man, take thee a sharp knife, take thee a barber's razor, cause it to pass upon thine head and upon thy ear, then take thee balances to weigh and divide the head. Thou shalt burn with fire a third part in the midst of the city, when the days of the siege are fulfilled, and thou shalt take a third part and smite about it with a knife, and a third part thou shalt scatter in the wind, and I will draw out a sword after them. Thou shalt also take thereof a few in number, and bind them in thy skirts. Then take them again, and cast them into the midst of the fire, and burn them in the fire. For thereof shall a fire come forth into all the house of Israel.
This is what the sovereign Jehovah said. This is Jerusalem, which I have set in the center of the nations, with countries all around her. Yet in her wickedness she has rebelled against my laws and decrees more than the nations and countries around her. She has rejected my laws and has not followed my decrees. Therefore, this is what sovereign Jehovah says. You have been more unruly than the nations around you, have not followed my decrees and kept my laws. You have not even conformed the standards of the nations around you.
Prepare the chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes committed under pretense of civil justice, and the city is full of violence. Therefore, I will bring the worst of the nations, and they will take possession of their houses. I will also silence their pride, and their holy places will be profaned. When anguish comes, they shall seek peace, but there will be none. Disaster will come upon disaster, and rumor will be heaped on rumor. They will seek a vision from a prophet, but the law and guidance will be lost from the priest and counsel from the elders.
What translation are you reading from, Frank?
Amplified.
It's very different.
It's supposed to start at 5:8.
Oh, I'm sorry. I turned too many pages. Excuse me. 5:8?
Yeah.
Thank you. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I myself am against you, and I will execute judgments among you in the sight of the nations. Because of all your abominations, I will do among you that which I have not done, and the like of which I will not do again. Therefore, fathers will eat their sons among you, and sons will eat their fathers. And I will execute judgments on you, and I will scatter to all the winds the remnant of you. So as I live, says the Lord God, surely because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your detestable idols and with all your abominations, therefore I will also diminish you and withdraw. And my eye will have no pity, and I will not spare. One third of you will die of virulent disease or be consumed by famine among you. One third will fall by the sword around you, and one third I will scatter to all the winds, and I will unsheathe the sword behind them.
Thus shall my anger spend itself, and I will vent my fury upon them and satisfy myself. And they shall know that I am the Lord, that I have spoken in my jealousy when I have spent my fury upon them. Moreover, I will make you a desolation and an object of reproach among the nations all around you and in the sight of all who pass by. You shall be a reproach and a taunt, a warning and a horror to the nations all around you when I execute judgments on you in anger and fury and with furious rebukes. I am Jehovah, I have spoken. When I send against you the deadly arrows of famine, arrows of destruction, which I will send to destroy you, and when I bring more and more famine upon you and break your supply of bread, I will send famine and wild beasts against you, and they shall rob you of your children. Pestilence and blood shall pass through you, and I will bring the sword upon you. I am Jehovah, I have spoken.
Okay, let's pause for a bit. A few things to cover. First of all, pop quiz, and yes, this is related. Mediterranean Sea. What does the word Mediterranean mean?
It's the mainland.
Two pieces, Medi and Terranean, right? Between the lands, perhaps? Between the lands. One between Europe and Africa, right? Okay. In the middle of all the lands, well, I mean, it's actually all the way around, okay. Perhaps the center of the earth. Okay. Mediterranean. Anybody know what language this comes from? It's actually from Latin. What country, right, spoke Latin and is right in the middle of that? Rome, right? It's the center. Rome is the center of the world. And the Mediterranean Sea fits with that naming. Is Rome the center of the world to Ezekiel? No. Where's the center of the world?
Jerusalem
is the center of the world. Why is Jerusalem the center of the world? So it's God's people. That's where God's throne is, right? And so you see that here in verse 5, right? Set her in the center of the nations. All right? Just keep that in the back of your mind whenever you read Revelation, okay? When it talks about, this seems worldwide, this seems huge, and it is. What's the center of the world? Rome. No. That is not a biblical worldview. Center of the world is not Rome. Center of the world is Jerusalem. And if God destroys Jerusalem, the whole world is all in upheaval. Because that's the center of the world. So, just a thing. Now, this is not particularly parallel to Revelation 6, 1 through 8, which is our parallel here. But I just thought I would bring that up. Now, verse 10. Therefore, fathers shall eat their sons in your midst, and sons shall eat their fathers. Why would you do that?
Siege.
Famine, right? So little food. It's very, very horrific. This is the nature of, this can be the nature of siege warfare, right? And through all of that, verse 13, thus shall my anger spend itself, and I will vent my fury upon them and satisfy myself. Now with that in mind, keep your finger there. Turn to Revelation chapter 6. And so I'm going to read Revelation chapter 6, 1 through 8. And I want you to tell me what you think this person is pointing to when they made this list. What are they pointing to that is theoretically parallel? Okay. Revelation chapter 6. Now I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals. And I heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. And when he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth, so that people should slay one another. And he was given a great sword. When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a black horse, and its rider had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and wine." When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of a fourth living creature say, "Come." And I looked, behold, a pale horse, and his rider, its name was Death, and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over the fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with pestilence and by wild beasts of the earth. Okay? What do you think? What's parallel? There are some parallel things. That doesn't mean that this is meant to parallel Ezekiel, but there are certainly parallel things. What you got?
Well, it's a siege.
Seems to be a siege. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's talking about the same siege or not.
All right. There's siege language, there's war language, right? What else?
Rationing.
What else?
It does kill a different amount.
But what's the purpose of having a scale? Why would you have a scale?
Weighing
amounts and stuff. All right, so you're comparing things. You know, Revelation tends to do a lot of dividing up, right, into portions, where Ezekiel, well, it actually did the same thing. Now here it's fourths, right? In Ezekiel, it was thirds of his hair, right? He shaved his beard and his head and did various things to these to represent things. Similarity, but not exactly the same, because the numbers are different. Anything else? Notice verse 8. When death comes, right? And they were given, all right, and they were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword and famine and pestilence and wild beasts, right? All of those were mentioned in Ezekiel. So there's lots of correspondence. Is John quoting Ezekiel? Well, John never quotes any of the Old Testament, as far as I know. There's not a single quote in this whole thing. There's allusions all over the place. But is this meant to be a reference to Ezekiel? Maybe. I don't know. But maybe. There's a lot of correspondence there. It could just be coincidence, right? Pestilence, famine, sword, all those things are going to happen in a siege, regardless. Wild beast, okay, probably not. I mean, if you're in a siege, you want wild beasts because you can kill them and eat them. Okay, so maybe that one's not necessarily going to be there. But all the other elements are there. So it's at the very least, I think, parallel an idea. But this could apply to most sieges that have ever happened. Now let's go to chapter 6. I don't know if there's enough correspondence there to really prove it. One way you can prove correspondence is what we did at the end of the book, where we saw, okay, this is parallel, but is it really parallel? But you see it's parallel over and over and over again in a sequence. That proves it. Maybe there's something in chapter 6, because he's pointing at chapter 6 and saying something in chapter 6 is parallel through Revelation chapter 6, 9 through 11. So let's read it. Who was our last reader? You want to read? Okay.
The word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face toward the mountains of Israel, and prophesy unto them, and say, Ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Jehovah. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah to the mountains and to the hills, to the watercourses and to the valleys, Behold, I, even I, will bring the sword upon you, and I will destroy your high places. And your altars shall become desolate, and your sun images shall be broken. And I will cast down the slain men before your idols, and I will lay the dead bodies of the children of Israel before their idols, and I will scatter your bones round about your altars. And all your dwelling places, the city shall be laid waste, and the high places shall be desolate, that your altars may be laid waste and made desolate. And your idols may be broken and ceased, and your sun images may be honed out, and your work shall be abolished. And the slain shall fall in the midst of you, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah.
Yet I will leave some of you alive when you have among the nations some who escape the sword, and when you are scattered through the countries. Then those of you who escape will remember me among the nations where they are carried captive, how I have been broken over their whoring heart that has departed from me, and over their eyes that go whoring after their idols. And they will be loathsome in their sight, in their own sight, for the evils that they have committed, for all their abominations. And they shall know that I am the Lord. I have not said in vain that I will do this evil to them.
Thus saith the Lord God, smite with thine hand, and stamp with thy foot, and say, Alas, for all the evil abominations of the house of Israel, for they shall fall by the sword, by the famine, and by pestilence. He that is far off shall die of the pestilence, and he that is near shall fall by the sword, and he that remaineth is besieged shall die by the famine. Thus will I accomplish my fury upon them. Then shall ye know that I am the Lord, when their slain men shall be among their idols, round about their altars, upon every high hill, in all the tops of the mountains, and under every green tree, and under every thick oak, in the place where they did offer sweet savor to their idols. So will I stretch out my hand upon them, and make their land desolate, yea, more desolate than the wilderness toward Diblath, in all their habitations, and they shall know that I am the Lord.
Okay, thank you. Now let's go back to Revelation. Once again, keep your finger there. All right, let's see if there is parallel here. Revelation chapter 6 and our guide says there is a parallel in 9 through 11. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the witness they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? Then they were each given a white robe, and told to rest a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves had been. All right? Are there any parallels? I didn't notice that one. Where is that? Any other possible parallels? Here's what I think they're going after here. And I'm not at all convinced. I lean towards this as a false friend. The parallel, at least that I can see, is there are altars in both places, and there are dead people around the bottom of those altars. All right? But there's a huge contrast between what's happening in Ezekiel and what's happening in Revelation, which is what? In terms of these people who are dying.
Revelation,
they're the martyrs. They are the faithful. In Ezekiel, it's the opposite. It's the idolaters. So that's tenuous. So if this is purposeful in Revelation, he's flipping it. Possible. Whenever we saw the parallels at the end of the book, there were some that were clearly parallel in the sequence, but it was not at all clear what it meant. All right? So, I see parallel in sequence, but I am very skeptical about this one. Now, though there is some good Old Testament parallels for some of the stuff that we've seen outside of Ezekiel, and I do want to call attention to them. Question. Let's think about this last section about the martyrs below the altar. In the Old Testament, what belongs below the altar? What goes there? Does anybody know? Ark of the Covenant is in the Holy of Holies, so it doesn't go below the altar. So turn to Leviticus chapter 4. And this is going to apply to more than just what we're reading here, because as you'll see, what goes below the altar, this is naturally what would happen under an altar. Okay? Leviticus chapter 4. Okay? And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, if anyone sins unintentionally in any of the Lord's commandments about things not to be done, and does any one of them, if it is the anointed priest who sins, thus bringing guilt on the people, then he shall offer for this sin that he has committed a bull from the herd without blemish to Yahweh for a sin offering. He shall bring the bull to the entrance of the tent of meeting before Yahweh and lay his hand on the head of the bull and kill the bull before Yahweh. And the anointed priest shall take some of the blood of the bull and bring it to the tent of meeting, and the priest shall dip his finger in the blood and sprinkle part of the blood seven times before Yahweh in front of the veil of the sanctuary. And the priest shall put some of the blood on the horns of the altar of fragrant incense before Yahweh that is in the tent of meeting. And all the rest of the blood of the bull he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering that is at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Okay. Turn to Exodus 29. This is about the consecration of priests. So it's not just about that one specific situation. Here's another one. Starting in verse 10. Then you shall bring the bull before the tent of meeting, and Aaron and his sons shall lay their hands on the head of the bull. Then you shall kill the bull before Yahweh at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and shall take part of the blood of the bull and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger, and the rest of the blood you shall pour out at the base of the altar. Okay? So what belongs at the base of the altar? Blood. And in the ancient world, this would be kind of natural, right? And here, it doesn't appear like the animal is actually physically killed on the altar, but that would often be the case in altars. And what would naturally happen if you cut an animal on top of an altar? The sacrificial animal would die, and the blood would drip down to the bottom of the altar, all right? Now, take this to Revelation. Why are the martyrs at the base of the altar? Because their blood has been spilled. And if you really want to take the image, right? Or if you really want to take the image, which I think is exactly what John's doing, all right? All right? If you really want to take it, they're not just happened to be there. It's they were sacrificed. Okay? They were sacrificed. And naturally, their blood is at the base of the altar, right? As one person says, I am poured out, Paul, continually as a drink offering to God. Okay? Same kind of image there. The blood of the martyrs, their souls, right, if we think back to Revelation, are under the altar. Why are their souls under the altar? Well, because their blood was under the altar. And what's the connection between the soul and the blood? What does the Old Testament say? Is in the blood. The life is in the blood. Now, let's go back to Revelation. Nine through 11 again. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the witness they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell in the earth? Then they were each given a white robe and told to rest a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete, who were to be killed as they themselves had been. Verse 10, they cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? What is the earliest time in the Old Testament where somebody's blood calls out to God after being murdered? Cain. Turn to Genesis. Genesis chapter 4. Verse 8, Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then Yahweh said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And Yahweh said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Okay? So, starting in Revelation, right? Excuse me, starting in Genesis, you've got this notion. The life is in the blood. And that is carried throughout the law. Why were they not supposed to eat blood? Life was in the blood. Okay? That was just baked into the law. That's why some of the Jews found it very offensive to say that the drink we take when we take the Lord's Supper is the blood of Christ. That's very potentially offensive to people. All right? Now, from our perspective, we look at that and go, of course we're supposed to drink the blood of Christ because life is in the blood, right? We turn that around and say, that's exactly why you do it. Actually, the blood of bulls and goats, it wouldn't have done it anyway. But the symbolism is there, and it makes sense. But all the way from Genesis, all right, and then if you agree, you've got it all the way in Revelation. All right, you've got this notion of the saints being killed by the wicked, all right? And them crying out, their blood crying out, if you're in Genesis 4 or in Revelation, the souls, right, which is where their blood was poured out, the souls crying out for vengeance, all right? For vengeance. When will you avenge us? Now, Genesis 4, it doesn't necessarily say vengeance, right? It just says the blood of Abel is crying out. Okay, so that idea may not be there. It may just be a cry of agony, cry for help. May or may not be vengeance. When you get to Revelation, though, it's very clear. The saints martyred, not just killed, sacrificed, all right? Crying out for vengeance. Now, was it time for it all to be over? Nope. What had to happen? Rest a little longer. More must be sacrificed still. That's the picture in Revelation. So go ahead and turn back to that. And this is where we'll have to end, just due to time. Verse 11, and they were each given a white robe and to rest, and told to rest a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and their brothers should be complete and were to be killed as they themselves had been. All right? Just rest a little longer. Right? Not a long time. Right? And the preterist, those who think that this is given shortly before the destruction of Jerusalem and meant to refer to the period of Jerusalem's fall, will jump all over, like me, with these time references. It's short. There are very few more of your saints that need to die for this sacrifice to be complete. Very, very short. So just rest a little while. And then we find, of course, by the end of the book, things do get resolved. But that's later in the book. So, to me, that idea forms a better foundation for those verses in Revelation than what you've got in Ezekiel. Because it's flipped. In Ezekiel, it's the idolaters that are slain at the foot of their altars. All right? So, but maybe, right? Maybe. Because we'll look at chapter 7, and we'll look at chapter 9, all right? And we'll look at chapter 10, because these are all still parallel sequentially. And look in chapter 12 and see. Because maybe, in terms of sequence, we might have to come back and say, maybe there's something to it. Even if we're not exactly sure what it is, maybe there's something to it. Any thoughts? Any questions? For next time, one other thing I was going to bring up. For next time, read Zechariah. Okay? There's another really good parallel for this chapter. Read Zechariah. It's not that long of a prophet. Because, like I said before, Revelation is echoing the Old Testament all over the place. Not just Ezekiel. All sorts of things from the Old Testament. And this chapter sure seems to have some echoes of the prophet Zechariah as well. Okay? So read that and see if you can find those parallels. And we'll start with that next Lord's Day. Okay? Zechariah, not Zephaniah. Zechariah. Okay? No other points of discussion? False friends, maybe? I don't know. We'll see. Hard to say. Okay. Grady, you pray first, please.